But there will be no extinction this time. The game of the mystics is up. You will perish, in and by your own unreality. We, the men of reason, will survive. I have called out on strike, the kind of martyrs who had never deserted you before. I have given them the weapon they had lacked, the knowledge of their own moral value. I have taught them that the world is ours, whenever we choose to claim it, by virtue and grace of the fact that ours is the morality of life. They, the great victims who had produced all the wonders of humanity's brief summer, they, the industrialists, the conquerors of matter, had not discovered the nature of their right. They had known that theirs was the power. I taught them that theirs was the glory. You who dare to regard us as the moral inferiors of any mystic who claims supernatural visions, you who scramble like a vulture's for plundered pennies, yet honor a fortune-teller above a fortune-maker, you who scorn a businessman as ignoble, but esteem any posturing artist as exalted, the root of your standards is that mystic miasma which comes from primordial swamps, that cult of death, which pronounces a businessman immoral by reason of the fact that he keeps you alive. You who claim that you long to rise above the crude concerns of the body, above the drudgery of serving mere physical needs. Who is enslaved by physical needs? The Hindu, who labors from sunrise to sunset at the shafts of a hand plow for a bowl of rice? Or the American who is driving a tractor? Who is the conqueror of physical reality? The man who sleeps on a bed of nails? Or the man who sleeps on an inner spring mattress? Which is the monument to the triumph of the human spirit over matter? The germ-eaten hovels on the shorelines of the Ganges, or the Atlantic skyline of New York? Unless you learn the answers to these questions, and learn to stand at reverent attention when you face the achievements of man's mind, you will not stay much longer on this earth, which we love and will not permit you to damn. You will not sneak by with the rest of your lifespan. I have foreshortened the usual course of history, and have let you discover the nature of the payment you had hoped to switch to the shoulders of others. It is the last of your own living power that will now be drained to provide the unearned for the worshippers and carriers of death. Do not pretend that a malevolent reality defeated you. You were defeated by your own evasions. Do not pretend that you will perish for a noble ideal. You will perish as fodder for the haters of man. But to those of you who still retain a remnant of the dignity and will to love one's life, I am offering the chance to make a choice. Choose whether you wish to perish for a morality you have never believed or practiced. Pause on the brink of self-destruction and examine your values and your life. You had known how to take an inventory of your wealth. Now take an inventory of your mind. Since childhood, you have been hiding the guilty secret that you feel no desire to be moral, no desire to seek self-immolation, that you dread and hate your code but dare not say it even to yourself, that you're devoid of those moral instincts which others profess to feel. The less you felt, the louder you proclaimed your selfless love and servitude to others, in dread of ever letting them discover your own self, the self that you betrayed, the self that you kept in concealment like a skeleton in the closet of your body. And they who were at once your dupes and your deceivers, they listened and voiced their loud approval, in dread of ever letting you discover that they were harboring the same unspoken secret. Existence among you is a giant pretense, an act you all perform for one another, each feeling that he is the only guilty freak, each placing his moral authority in the unknowable known only to others, each faking the reality he feels they expect him to fake, none having the courage to break the vicious circle. No matter what dishonorable compromise you've made with your impracticable creed, no matter what miserable balance, half cynicism, half superstition, you now manage to maintain, you still preserve the root, the lethal tenet, the belief that the moral and the practical are opposites. Since childhood, you have been running from the terror of a choice you have never dared fully to identify. If the practical, whatever you must practice to exist, whatever works, succeeds, achieves your purpose, whatever brings you food and joy, whatever profits you, is evil. And if the good, the moral, is the impractical, whatever fails, destroys, frustrates, whatever injures you and brings you loss or pain, then your choice is to be moral or to live. The sole result of that murderous doctrine was to remove morality from life. You grew up to believe that moral laws bear no relation to the job of living, except as an impediment and threat, that man's existence is an amoral jungle where anything goes and anything works. And in that fog of switching definitions which descends upon a frozen mind, you have forgotten that the evils damned by your creed were the virtues required for living, and you have come to believe that actual evils are the practical means of existence. Forgetting that the impractical good was self-sacrifice, you believe that self-esteem is impractical. Forgetting that the practical evil was production, you believe that robbery is practical. Swinging like a helpless branch in the wind of an uncharted moral wilderness, you dare not fully to be evil or fully to live. When you are honest, you feel the resentment of a sucker. When you cheat, you feel terror and shame. When you are happy, your joy is diluted by guilt. When you suffer, your pain is augmented by the feeling that pain is your natural state. You pity the men you admire. You believe they are doomed to fail. You envy the men you hate. You believe they are the masters of existence. You feel disarmed when you come up against a scoundrel. You believe that evil is bound to win, since the moral is the impotent, the impractical. Morality, to you, is a phantom scarecrow made of duty, of boredom, of punishment, of pain, a crossbreed between the first schoolteacher of your past and the tax collector of your present, a scarecrow standing in a barren field waving a stick to chase away your pleasures. And pleasure to you is a liquor-soggy brain, a mindless slut, the stupor of a moron who stakes his cash on some animal's race. Since pleasure cannot be moral, if you identify your actual belief, you will find a triple damnation of yourself, of life, of virtue, in the grotesque conclusion you have reached. You believe that morality is a necessary evil. Do you wonder why you live without dignity, love without fire, and die without resistance? Do you wonder why, wherever you look, you see nothing but unanswerable questions, why your life is torn by impossible conflicts, why you spend it straddling irrational fences to evade artificial choices, such as soul or body, mind or heart, security or freedom, private profit or public good? Do you cry that you find no answers? By what means did you hope to find them? You reject your tool of perception, your mind, then complain that the universe is a mystery. You discard your key, then wail that all doors are locked against you. You start out in pursuit of the irrational, then damn existence for making no sense. The fence you have been straddling for 2 hours while hearing my words and seeking to escape them is the coward's formula contained in the sentence, "But we don't have to go to extremes." The extreme you have always struggled to avoid is the recognition that reality is final, that A is A, and that the truth is true. A moral code impossible to practice, a code that demands imperfection or death, has taught you to dissolve all ideas in fog, to permit no firm definitions, to regard any concept as approximate, and any rule of conduct as elastic, to hedge on any principle, to compromise on any value, to take the middle of any road. By extorting your acceptance of supernatural absolutes, it has forced you to reject the absolute of nature. By making moral judgments impossible, it has made you incapable of rational judgment. A code that forbids you to cast the first stone has forbidden you to admit the identity of stones and to know when or if you're being stoned. The man who refuses to judge, who neither agrees nor disagrees, who declares that there are no absolutes and believes that he escapes responsibility, is the man responsible for all the blood that is now spilled in the world. Reality is an absolute. Existence is an absolute. A speck of dust is an absolute. And so is a human life. Whether you live or die is an absolute. Whether you have a piece of bread or not is an absolute. Whether you eat your bread or see it vanish into a looter's stomach is an absolute.